For several years, I have been warning in these broadcasts about the growing infiltration and subversion of American law enforcement agencies by Jewish pressure groups. This process, which has been going on at a significant rate for more than two decades, accelerated during the Clinton administration, especially after the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995, when Jewish groups put themselves forward as experts on terrorism based on their experience in repressing Palestinians and on their undercover snooping into dissident groups in the United States. They offered training seminars to the FBI and other federal police agencies, to various military units, and to state and local police agencies. We'll show you how to recognize terrorists and potential terrorists and how to deal with them. We will tell you about these dangerous dissident organizations, these hate groups, and we will help you to prevent another terrorist bombing, such as the one carried out by Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City, the Jewish groups told the police and military agencies. The most visible of these groups was the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, but as we will see, there also were other less visible Jewish groups at work. Never mind that Timothy McVeigh had not belonged to any dissident group, but had acted solely as an angry individual determined to send the government a message that its behavior in massacring the members of the Branch Davidian Church in Waco, Texas, would not be tolerated. Never mind that the Anti-Defamation League and other Jewish groups offering their services really were pushing the military and law enforcement agencies to shift their emphasis toward the investigation and repression of dissidents and the enforcement of a brand new category of laws, so-called hate crime and speech crime laws, rather than toward the prevention of terrorism. Never mind those things. It was the Clinton era, and Bill Clinton had brought more Jews into the government than any previous president. Jews were riding high in the Clinton administration, from Monica Lewinsky to Madeleine Albright. When the Jews wanted something, the Jews got it, and smart bureaucrats, including those in the military and law enforcement agencies, knew better than to ask questions. Bill Clinton's extraordinary partiality to Jews lasted right up to the moment he left office, with a vastly disproportionate number of the last-minute pardons and commutations of sentences he issued on January 20th last year going to Jewish criminals. The most notorious of these was the international Jewish super swindler Mark Rich, who was able to persuade the head Jew in the Anti-Defamation League, Abe Foxman, to intercede with Clinton on his behalf. All of this partiality has served Mr. Clinton well. In his first year after leaving office, he received $9.2 million in speaking fees, most of it from Jewish organizations. He received $400,000 last year from one Jewish organization alone, the Jewish National Fund, for three speeches. More than $9 million for some 70 speeches during the course of a year. Fascinating, isn't it? You can find more information on Mr. Clinton's career as a speaker to Jewish groups for huge fees in the June 18th issue of the New York Times, if you look carefully enough. Well, that was Bill Clinton, a Democrat and a flamboyantly crooked lawyer from Arkansas who appealed to the lowest elements in the electorate and had a love affair with the Jewish mass media. Most voters hoped for more from George Bush and the Republicans. Unfortunately, what we've gotten is more of the same. In fact, Jewish infiltration and subversion of our military and law enforcement agencies has proceeded even faster since Mr. Bush took office. Bush certainly doesn't need the money from speaking fees, but he nevertheless has given virtual run of the government to Jews. Under Mr. Bush, as under Mr. Clinton, what the Jews want, the Jews get, And no one in the government has the courage or the integrity to challenge the situation. We talked last week about the FBI turning loose 200 Israeli espionage agents it arrested in the United States last year, and about its refusal to arrest the anthrax terrorist who killed 5 people and terrorized the whole country with his mailings of anthrax-infected letters. In the anthrax case, the FBI still is putting on a big show of trying to find the perpetrator. FBI spokesmen claim that more personnel and resources are allocated to catching the anthrax terrorist than to any other case except the 9/11 attack itself. I claim that this is all a fraud, that the FBI knows who the perpetrator is, but has orders not to arrest him, because he is a Jew who carried out the anthrax mailings in an attempt to cast suspicion on Muslims and generate public hostility against Israel's enemies. If this became public knowledge, there would be a substantial drop in support among ordinary Americans for Israel and for Mr. Bush's current war in the Middle East. The big question is, why would the FBI go along with such a cover-up? Even with orders directly from Attorney General John Ashcroft or from George Bush himself, any FBI official who went along with the cover-up would be taking a huge risk. Why do that for the sake of Israel? Who would protect the FBI people involved if the cover-up got blown? The partnership between the Anti-Defamation League and the FBI that both ADL National Director Abe Boxman and FBI Director Robert Mueller have been bragging about doesn't seem enough to account for such a flagrant dereliction of duty on the part of the FBI. Surely someone in the FBI would blow the whistle. Actually, someone has blown the whistle, but you'd hardly know it from reading the news. Of course, there's been much coverage of one recent FBI whistleblower, Colleen Rowley, a special agent in the FBI's Minneapolis field office, in connection with FBI officials ignoring reports she sent to Washington headquarters last August. That was before the September 11th attack, about a suspected terrorist, Zacharias Moussaoui, who was attempting to learn to fly 747 jets. But there's been very little coverage of another FBI whistleblower, Sybil Edmonds, and the coverage of her far more alarming revelations has been quite cryptic, to say the least. There was a story in the Washington Post 10 days ago, on June 19th, about several FBI whistleblowers, one of whom was Sybil Edmonds, who worked as a translator of wiretapped messages in the FBI's Washington, D.C. office. Despite her name, Edmonds is, in fact, a Jewess, but she is a rare Jewess without a very strong sense of loyalty to her tribe. Indeed, an alarmingly high percentage of the FBI's wiretap translators are Jews, and nearly all of them who translate Middle Eastern languages are Jews. Most of these have a much stronger sense of their Jewishness than does Edmonds, as Edmonds found out when they tried to recruit her into the Mossad, Israel's super-secret agency for espionage, terror, and assassination. The Washington Post story relates her account of the recruitment attempts in cryptic language that clearly is intended to avoid mentioning the words Jew, Israel, or Mossad, lest our gallant little democratic ally in the Middle East or its partisans in this country be cast in a bad light. I'll now read to you the relevant portions of that June 19th story in the Washington Post. I quote, "That whistleblower, Sybil Edmonds, 32, a former wiretap translator in the Washington field office, raised suspicions about a co-worker's connections to a group under surveillance. Under pressure, FBI officials have investigated and verified the veracity of parts of Edmonds' story, according to documents and people familiar with an FBI briefing of congressional staff. The FBI confirmed that Edmonds' co-worker had been part of an organization that was a target of top-secret surveillance, and that the same co-worker had unreported contacts with a foreign government official subject to the surveillance. The FBI said it was unable to corroborate an allegation by Edmonds that she was approached to join the targeted group. Edmonds said she told Dennis Satcher, a special agent in the Washington field office who was conducting the surveillance, about the co-worker's actions, and Satcher replied, "It looks like espionage to me." Satcher declined to comment when contacted by a reporter. Edmonds was fired in March after she reported her concerns. Government officials said the FBI fired her because her disruptiveness hurt her on-the-job performance. Edmonds says she believes she was fired in retaliation for reporting on her co-worker. Edmonds began working at the FBI in late September of last year. In an interview, she said she became particularly alarmed when she discovered that a recently hired FBI translator was saying that she belonged to the Middle Eastern organization whose taped conversations she had been translating for FBI counterintelligence agents. Officials asked that the name of the target group not be revealed for national security reasons. Edmonds said that on several occasions the translator tried to recruit her to join the targeted foreign group. "This person told us she worked for our target organization," Edmonds said in an interview. "These are the people we are targeting, monitoring." Edmonds would not identify the other translator, but the Post has learned from other sources that she is a 33-year-old U.S. citizen whose native country is home to the target group. Both Edmonds and the other translator are U.S. citizens who trace their ethnicity to the same Middle Eastern country. Reached by telephone last week, the woman who works under contract for the FBI's Washington field office declined to comment. In December, Edmonds said the woman and her husband, a U.S. military officer, suggested during a hastily arranged visit to Edmonds' Northern Virginia home on a Sunday morning that Edmonds join the group. He said, "Are you a member of the particular organization?" Edmonds recalled the woman's husband saying, "It's a very good place to be a member. There are a lot of advantages of being with this organization and doing things together. This is our targeted organization. And one of the greatest things about it is you can have an unexpected early retirement, and you will be totally set if you go to that specific country." Edmonds also said the woman's husband told her she would be admitted to the group, especially if she said she worked for the FBI. Later, Edmonds said, the woman approached her with a list dividing up individuals whose phone lines were being secretly tapped. Under the plan, the woman would translate conversations of her former co-workers in the target organization, and Edmonds would handle other phone calls. Edmonds said she refused, and that the woman told her that her lack of cooperation could put her family in danger. Edmonds said she also brought her concerns to her supervisor and other FBI officials in the Washington field office. When no action was taken, she said, she reported her concerns to the FBI's Office of Professional Responsibility, then to Justice's Inspector General. "Investigations are being compromised," Edmonds wrote to the Inspector General's office in March. "Incorrect or misleading translations are being sent to agents in the field. Translations are being blocked and circumvented." Government officials familiar with the matter who asked not to be identified said that both Edmonds and the woman were given polygraph examinations by the FBI and that both passed, end of quote. I'm sorry that the cryptic language made that report more difficult to understand than it otherwise would have been. a certain unnamed Middle Eastern country, an unnamed co-worker of Sybil Edmonds who is a native of that unnamed Middle Eastern country, an unnamed target organization in that unnamed Middle Eastern country, and so on. The Washington Post tells us that the cryptic language is necessary for national security reasons. That's certainly a phony excuse. Do you really believe that the folks in the Israeli embassy reading this article can't figure out who is being talked about? The real reason for not mentioning names is not to keep the Mossad from finding out that they're being investigated. It's to keep any Sally Soccer Moms or Joe Sixpacks who might stumble across the story on their way to the comic strips or the sports pages from getting a clue as to who's really calling the shots at the FBI these days. Let me just run over the scenario again. After the Oklahoma City bombing, during a time when the FBI was being criticized for letting the bombing happen, Jewish groups promoted themselves as experts on terrorism and offered to train FBI agents and other law enforcement and military personnel. One of these Jewish groups was the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit, a group heavily involved in illegal activity and with long-standing ties to Jewish organized crime figures, such as international super swindler Mark Rich and Las Vegas gangster Mo Dalitz. Another of these Jewish groups was Israel's espionage and terror organization, Mossad, which specializes in the assassination of Israel's enemies in other countries using letter bombs, car bombs, exotic poisons, and trained hitmen armed with silencer-equipped submachine guns. The impropriety of FBI involvement with either of these Jewish organizations should have been obvious, but in the Clinton era, no bureaucrat in Washington dared say anything critical of Jews or Israel. George Bush has a different style, but no more scruples than Bill Clinton. By the time he became president, the corruption had proceeded so far that it was easy for him to decide to join it instead of trying to lick it. And early in his administration, another major terrorist event, that of September 11th, gave Jewish groups another rationale for strengthening their partnership with U.S. law enforcement agencies. With Anti-Defamation League agents working on the outside and redefining the types of criminal activity with which the FBI should concern itself, and Mossad agents working inside and preempting for themselves all investigations of interest to Israel, including all investigations of Israeli espionage, it is no wonder that the FBI's efficiency, morale, and prestige have plummeted, and things that would have been unthinkable a decade ago, such as refusing to prosecute the members of the largest espionage ring ever broken up in the United States and engaging in an internal cover-up of the anthrax terrorism case, could occur. This is a depressing situation, and as I have warned repeatedly, an extremely dangerous situation. We are in grave danger of losing all of our remaining liberty and soon thereafter becoming extinct as a people, as a race. There certainly is no hope at all of rectifying the situation from the top through the elected politicians and the top bureaucrats. Did you hear George Bush make his pronouncement on Monday about the conflict between the Jews and the Palestinians? Yasser Arafat, the elected leader of the Palestinians, must go because he has been tainted by terrorism. Anyone who, like Arafat, has condoned terrorism is unacceptable as a negotiating partner for the Israelis and must be replaced by someone who has clean hands. Really, I can imagine all of the Jewish leaders, including that man of peace, as Bush calls him, Ariel Sharon, rolling on the floor with laughter during Bush's statement. I would not be surprised if it were Sharon himself, the butcher of Beirut, the mass murderer of Palestinian women and children, the preeminent terrorist and war criminal in the Middle East, who wrote that statement for Bush. George Bush is a man utterly without honor, without principles, without a shred of genuine patriotism or racial loyalty. As long as the Jewish media continued to give him good press, he is perfectly content to be Ariel Sharon's step and fetch it, and to say and do whatever he is told to say and do. Underneath Bush is Attorney General John Ashcroft, a nutcase religious fanatic whose historical role model is Tomas de Torquemada, and who believes that the Jews can do no wrong because that's what it says in the Bible. And then there is FBI Director Robert Mueller, a pitiful specimen of an unprincipled career bureaucrat indeed, a man who is completely unperturbed by the ongoing Jewish subversion and takeover of the FBI. Our one basis for hope is the fact that the takeover is not yet complete. If it were complete, there would be no debate, no investigation by some FBI agents of the Mossad, no newspaper articles with cryptic language like the one I read to you from the Washington Post. The fact is, there are many FBI special agents who are not happy about what is being done to the FBI, and there are hundreds of thousands of perceptive and intelligent white Americans who also are not happy. Unfortunately, very few of these people have the courage to do or even say anything about what is happening. And there is one other factor besides a lack of courage, although it is a related factor, and that is the inability to address our problem in a truly fundamental way, a truly radical way. There are many patriotic Americans who would be alarmed to learn that a foreign espionage organization, the Mossad, has infiltrated the FBI and is able to subvert the FBI's operations. But there are fewer patriotic Americans willing and able to draw the necessary conclusions about the overall role of Jews in America. They see the problem as simply a problem with the Mossad. They resist tying the Mossad problem to the Anti-Defamation League problem and to the problem of Jewish influence in the government generally. They resist seeing the connection between the problem of Jewish influence in the government and Jewish influence in the mass media of news and entertainment. They resist seeing these things because to see them, to examine them, to think about them and draw conclusions from them is to become anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic. And they have been so thoroughly conditioned against that for so long that they simply can't deal with it. Many who are brave enough and honest enough to speak out about a Mossad problem cannot even think about the much larger Jewish problem, of which the Mossad problem is only a relatively small part. And as long as we refuse to think about the problem, as long as we are afraid to think about it, we cannot hope to solve it. And really, we'd better begin thinking about this problem very soon. Time is running out for America and for our people. Thanks for being with me again today.